This is the holiday tale of a smaller size baller. His friends were all ballers, but they were all taller. He found he could dribble and shoot the rock, but he couldn't quite dunk, and he often got blocked.
So after one practice, he made a bold wish. He closed his eyes tight, then swished a good swish.
And later that night, as he laid in his bed, a big booming voice filled the room in his head.
You wish you were taller, the booming voice hollered. If I'm tall, I can ball. Then I'll be a shot caller.
When he woke the next morning, his wish had come true. Instead of 2'7", he was 7'2". With his new larger frame and his giant red shoes, he stepped onto the court.
There's no way I can lose. He slammed and he jammed, scored points from all around. But he saw on the scoreboard his team was way down. How can we lose when I'm playing so well?
He looked to his teammates and then he could tell. For more than one player, let's make a great team.
We'll need everyone if we hope to succeed.
So he dished and he dashed, got the ball to Gasol. D-Rose drove to the hoop and saw Gibson's shot fall. Noah brought passion. McDermott and Dunleavy switched threes. Snell and Jimmy made buckets with an effortless ease.
When the buzzer rang out, the score told a new tale about a team that came together so wonderfully well.
He didn't win fortune and he didn't win fame, but the tall baller discovered the gift of the game. When Stacey King hollered, it was all understood. This team was too big, too strong, too fast, and too good.
Hello, Bulls fans. Welcome to another episode of the Chicago Bullseye. I have to say, before we introduce my compadre here, Fred Pfeiffer. Fred, I'm just going to let you jump in on this. I'm just going to say, Fred, we've been doing this now for 7 years, man. I mean, before we know it, we're going to be up on our 10-year anniversary of this show. And there have been ups and downs on this show since we've started doing this. Just, you know, and I think it's all coincided with this, with the Bulls. I mean, I think our excitement for this has always been, you know, we've always had a great show. We've always done a great job. But I think that our excitement has always kind of been tied to the success of the season. I don't know about you, Fred, but in the 7 years that we've been doing this, I am more excited to be doing this now than I was even when we started. And we were fired up. We were fired up back in 2007 when we started doing this. And I mean, this season, as a basketball fan, has been one of the best seasons ever. At least through December. I mean, this team is really, really good, and I am really excited to talk about it with you, Fred.
I totally agree with you, Mark. I mean, this is the best opportunity I think we have at winning a title, you know, since we were in the Eastern Conference Finals a few years back. But that team was really basically a one-man team on the offensive end. I mean, there was really no help for Derek. He had nowhere else to go. And now all of a sudden we have Jimmy Butler playing at all-star level. You got Gasol, who's on the offensive end, who's a force. You got guys like Brooks who are stepping up. It's just, to me, without a doubt, and I just hit me yesterday after, you know, we scored 49 points in the fourth quarter. And this team is the first Bulls team since the Jordan, Pippen, Kukoc era where you can win a game on offense. Every team in the interim since then basically was, you know, just defensive-centric, with the potential exception of, you know, that rookie year where Rose was there and it was just Rose and Gordon just, you know, throwing up shots. And, you know, we made some fun nights there in the first round, but that team was realistically had no chance at winning a title. This team is absolutely can, and I think they should be the prohibitive favorite in the East. And I completely agree with you. It's just so exciting, just so awesome to watch a game like that against a quality opponent, just hammer them like that with offense every time down, scoring. Rose playing at MVP level, Jimmy Butler at a MVP level, frankly. You got three All-Stars on the team and those three, and Noah still hasn't even really got rolling yet, you know, and I just think the sky's the limit for this team. They're playing great right now, and I don't know if you feel the same way. I don't even think they've remotely kind of, like, touched on their potential. You know, you see glimpses of it, but when you look at it, step back and look at it, almost every game this year, guys have been hurt. You know, I think I saw a stat today that Gasol and Noah have only played together, you know, 300-plus minutes. It's somewhere between 300 and 400 minutes. Those guys are going to play a lot better together as the season goes on and they start to understand each other's tendencies. You know, and as Tibbs experiments with the different front court options, there's just so much you can do. And we haven't even talked about Mirotić, who's just, you know, to me right now the favorite for Rookie of the Year. It's just incredible how well this team is starting to roll, and I'm excited too beyond belief.
I don't feel like we really have any holes, and it really hit me last night how good this team was when it was occurring to me in the fourth quarter that Taj Gibson wasn't even playing, nor was Pau Gasol. But, you know, first, the fact that Tibbs had the confidence to just go with a completely different lineup down the stretch, but especially a lineup that's offensive to begin with, was something that kind of blew my mind. But when you see Mirotić playing like that, and you look at the numbers that Mirotić and Gibson played last night, if Mirotić keeps going on like this, you're not going to be able to keep everybody happy forever. And I threw out to Stu during the game yesterday, I mean, what would you even trade for? If you could trade Taj Gibson right now, what would you even trade for? And I'm like, I don't think that there's a single position on this team that we really need. I think maybe a backup two, three, a swing guy, like a backup to Butler-ish, somewhere in that region, but that's really it. I mean, we've been going small with Heinrich playing a lot of two when Jimmy's sitting down, but Jimmy never sits. I don't know if we got anyone else, but Jimmy actually would sit. I mean, this team really is loaded everywhere.
I keep on hearing that, too. Yeah, we need another asset, you know, to give Jimmy some time. I don't agree. I don't. Jimmy's going to play 40 minutes. You know, as we get closer to playoffs, he's probably going to play 48. You know, you're going to send assets out just to get another guy in here, you know, and play a few minutes and rest him at the three. I don't think we need it. I really frankly don't. I know everybody's down in McDee and McDermott's, you know, horrible, and everybody thinks he's a big bust. He's played 198 minutes in the NBA. Butler after
that's the equivalent of 2.5 games.
Yeah, for Jimmy Butler, it's about a week's worth of minutes, right? I mean, you know, you're going to judge Jimmy Butler after 198 minutes.
Well, yeah, but
you would
Fred,
probably
we're playing
be saying
for this
the same
year
thing.
Now.
And
every year that you've said to me, hey, let's bring back Derrick Rose because this is our chance to win. Now this team is a chance to win. And I'm like, look, but, you know, McDermott, just call him a scratch for this year. I don't care. We need to right now do what we're going to do to make this team a team that can win a title because this team realistically can. So what do you even do? If you could do anything to this team to polish it up, what do you do?
I feel like it would be great if you can get McDermott rolling hitting three. You can't ever have enough guys who are able to come off the bench and do that. So that's the only thing that, you know, I would potentially like to see. He's going to be gone 2 months, right? So at earliest, you figure he'll be back in March. If he can get some time in March and he can start feeling comfortable and actually start contributing, great. Otherwise, you know, frankly, it's not needed. It's not something that's, I think, going to keep us from a title because Butler, when the playoffs happen, we all know he's going to be playing 48, close to 48 minutes a game. So, you know, why trade assets away to make the team, you know, a little bit better? I just don't think you need it. I think we have enough the way it is. I want to see him go forward with this team as is because I think McDermott down the road, I know everybody's down on him, but I think he's going to be a really solid player in the NBA. And again, I'll say it again. He's played 198 minutes in the NBA. You cannot judge a player based on that. And Snell, he's played about 1,500 minutes. So you can start judging Snell. Snell sucks. And he doesn't belong in the NBA. And he'll probably, you know, hopefully be gone next year. But it's far, far too early to judge McDermott. And so enough about McDermott. I mean, he's going to be out 2 months, and frankly, hopefully I'll give him some time to get his head straight and get his knee right, and you know, we'll be fine without him. We don't need him. We just don't need him right now. The team is.
I'll tell you what we need right now. What we need right now, don't say anything. Yesterday, Stan Van Gundy, they came out. They released a guy by the name of Josh Smith.
Shut up.
Josh Smith is a quality player.
Please
stop.
Playing
on a con. Like, this guy, you'd get him for almost free. And he's a 3-4. What would make this team better than a 3-4 type of combo player right now? You need a guy that can give Jimmy a little bit of a break.
No.
And you don't need help at the 5. You need help more at the 4. You need a guy that can kind of play that wing front court position because all of our bigs, which is where we're the most deep, they're just bigs. They can't play the 3. I think you don't need
Josh Smith. He's a bum. He's
never
a bum.
Game.
He was a bum.
Bum.
He was a bum with Atlanta. Have you seen what he's shooting this year? Mark, he's shooting 24% from 3, 39% from the field, and his free throw percentage is he's shooting at 46%. He's a bum with a capital B-U-M. I didn't like him when he was – I couldn't believe the contract that was signed for that jerk as a free agent. How are you in the NBA for – he's been in almost 10 years he's been in the NBA – 9 seasons, I believe, and your free throw percentage consistently goes down. You're at 68% your rookie year. You actually hit 71% your next year. And then from there, you're basically at his high was 72%. The last 3 years, you shot 63, 51, 53, and 46% from the free throw line. That's a big warning sign of a guy who really – and I understand if you were a center, right? This guy's a 3-4. this is basically a power forward slash three, and you don't put in the time to at least shoot an acceptable percentage for the free throw line, you're
well,
a bum.
What time?
He's a full class bum who's dependent. His whole career, he's been given the genetic gift of talent, and he's done some stuff to get himself at an acceptable level. He's got more talent than anybody in the world, and he's done nothing with it. He's a disaster. I don't want any part of that guy. And guys like that, like I talked about it. I was kind of shocked how many people were so big on Lance Stephenson. Lance Stephenson's a bum. Lance Stephenson has got great talent. No denying that. He's a great, fantastic player. But guys like that, you throw in a locker room, will tear the locker room apart. I think Josh Smith, I don't think he'd take kindly to playing 15 minutes a night, 10 minutes a night. I think there'd be a lot of grumbling. You actually think that guy is going to work in a Thibodeau system? You throw guys like that. One thing people underestimate in general, I think more than anything, is when you throw one bad guy in that locker room, how toxic that can be. I know from my work history, and in anybody's work history, if you get the wrong guy in any work environment, it will screw up things royally for everyone. Because there are just some people that don't – they're not team players. They're just not there to make the team better. They're there for themselves, and in doing so, it makes everybody else worse. And I think Josh Smith is one of those guys. I could not disagree with you more with the idea. Let's just go out and pay him next to nothing. I'd rather have him. He was so bad. I mean, how bad does he have to be that Stan Van Gundy cut him?
I don't agree with that though. But I still think.
Well, why don't you agree with it?
I think that Van Gundy did it as a scapegoat sort of situation to kind of show, hey. You gave me the keys to this team. You made me the coach and the GM, and this isn't my problem. This is, you know, the reason we suck is because of these guys that Joe Dumars brought in.
I think
Smith is a scapegoat, and I don't think it's cool, personally.
He's shooting 39%, buddy.
You know what? He's coming off of a stretch of 10 games where he's shooting almost 50%. He's playing fine. He certainly isn't playing to the point where let's go pay his salary to let him not play at all. Let's just pay this guy. I mean, he's still going to count against the cap. He's still going to, you know, there's no benefit to all you're doing is you're saying we're going to pay you to not play. He's far from the worst player on their team. That's all I'm saying. Stan Van Gundy, I think, is using him as a scapegoat. And I think that a guy like that, you know, he's talented. I mean, he's a talented player. A couple
people
ago, we were debating, was he better than Lou Alding a couple years ago? You know, I think career-wise, he's probably not. But, I mean, he's certainly at his peaks. Was better at his peaks than Dang ever was at any of his peaks because of his length and his size and his ability to get boards and blocks. But, back to the Bulls in the relation to that. I mean, do I really think he'd be great for this team? Yeah, maybe, maybe not. But I do think that the only hole that we might have right now is maybe a 3-4 type hole. But the fact is that no teams don't have holes. No teams don't have holes. And when I look at this team has so few holes that, like, it's ridiculous. I mean, you find me any other team in the league, any team, even the teams with the best records right now, and we could start pointing at holes on that team. This team is just now starting to hit their stride, and they're maybe not even hitting their stride. They're just getting going. People make a big point of the fact that we scored 49 yesterday, but also let's just keep in mind that was kind of the tempo of the game. It was a shootout. I think Toronto scored 37 in the fourth. They've scored 30-plus in a couple quarters. Now, we did score 49. That's unbelievable, but you can't expect that every night. But is this team's identity going to be one in which we're going to beat teams by outscoring them, or is our identity similar to what it's been in the past where we're going to be this big defensive team? I look at the numbers right now. We're giving up about 100 points a game, a little bit less. Maybe it's a little bit less than that. But certainly defensively, we haven't been to where we've been in the past. What is our identity, Fred?
Our identity now is starting to shift more towards the offensive side of the ball, which is fine with me. I'm hoping that Tibbs realizes our identity needs to be not just defense. It needs to be shifted as a more balanced team because we have the talent. You know, you got to do the best you can with what you've been given. And guys like Gasol are offensive forces. They're not, you know, defensive. He can play acceptable defense. I think he's proven that he's a solid defensive player. He's never going to be great, but he's so good offensively, and he demands double teams, and he can score for you in the post, and he makes the right passes, he makes the intelligent plays, that it's okay to give up a few more if you're going to get a lot more in the offensive end. And I really think the team's starting to develop more into the San Antonio mode, which is what wins titles, what you want to see, as opposed to this, we only play defense, you know, we only, you know, we bring our lunch bucket and we'll play games that are 81-77 type of mentality. I mean, I'm not saying that we should sacrifice defense. Obviously, I think we're going to get a lot better as the season goes on, because it's still such a, there's so many new moving parts to this roster. It takes a while to get, you know, really understand Tibbs' defense. And we've had so many injuries too, Mark, that, you know, we really haven't been able to develop that chemistry yet. And I think the defense is going to continue to get better, and the offense is going to continue to get better. It's only going to, if we can keep, stay remotely healthy, it's only going to keep on rolling. But, you know, all those concerns, oh, why did we sign Gasol? Why didn't we go after Stevenson? You know, why didn't we get Melo? Barkley said it. And during the last game, one of the last few games where he was broadcasting, he said, you know, I think the Bulls are better off with Gasol as opposed to signing Melo. He might have a point, man. I think I kind of agree with him. Melo would have taken up so much of the cap, we wouldn't have been able, we would have had to send out Taj. And Gasol is on such a good contract, such a cheap contract. For what he's returned, there's no doubt he's played better than Melo this year. I mean, Melo's not playing a lot. So I think he's right. Do you disagree with what he said, that, you know, maybe we were better off with plan B as opposed to plan A?
Well, I mean, as somebody who was a huge supporter of Carmelo Anthony and wanted him more than anybody in the world in the offseason, I got to agree with what he's saying. I mean, the depth of this team is what's making it so good. We move the ball a lot. I mean, that's part of what makes us such a good offensive team. Obviously, Carmelo Anthony is a great offensive player, but he also is somebody that does stop the ball. I'm not saying that the ball would – it's a different situation. So it's difficult to say, is this guy that we're seeing in New York, would he be the same player that we'd have over here? Probably not, because, you know, this team's different. And, you know, he'd probably be more motivated to move the ball around and play within a system. And I'm sure Thibodeau would demand it of him. But not see, having seen that before in Carmelo Anthony, you know, the way this team shares the ball, especially Jimmy Butler's maturation. I mean, Butler plays within our system. He's averaging 22 points a game. What more do you really need from Carmelo Anthony? Because it's like, if Butler's scoring 22 points a game, and you've got Gasol scoring almost 20, and Rose is averaging almost 20, yep, we're going to get our points. I mean, we don't really need we don't need a 30-point a game score if we've got all these little offensive pieces. I don't think that anybody thought. I think that it was kind of this, we're never going to be good on offense thing if we don't get Carmelo Anthony. But, you know, I'm surprised, Fred. I didn't expect this team to be this good. You know, I came into this season, I know you were very high on us, and I wasn't not high on the team. I thought that we had our best chance to be good, but there were a lot of question marks. Butler was a huge question mark. The rookies were a huge question mark. There were a lot of question marks.
Gasol was a question mark.
Gasol was a question mark.
For everybody
Rose
but me.
Rose was a question mark.
For everybody but me. Yeah.
The only thing that you completely had no question mark on was Pau Gasol. That's true. But you definitely were questioning, what is Rose going to be Rose? We didn't know. Is Butler, you know, Butler, whoever would have thought that he'd be like this? He never played, but he never showed this even in glimpses. I mean, this guy this season has played better on average than he played in any single game last year. He's that good. Then he had flaws in his game last year that were so huge. His field goal percentage was terrible last year. Whoever would have seen that coming? And then, I mean, the rookies, whatever you want to say about the way McDermott played, Mirotić is more than made up for it. I mean, you never thought you should be getting a player that could be Rookie of the Year, and it's not just because Jabari Parker's out. I think that two things have occurred. I think we have, you know, Mirotić has started to get real minutes, and he's starting to play a lot better. And you see, my God, when this guy gets the minutes, I mean, he finished the game yesterday. That should say a lot about Thibodeau's confidence in this guy, that he finished. I don't think Taj Gibson has not finished a game in a Chicago Bulls uniform that he has been healthy in his entire tenure here. I swear, at least since Thibodeau's been here. Thibodeau's had a never-ending hard-on for that guy. And last night, Mirotić ended the game. And I think we saw that our offense was rolling.
Mirotić
gets rebounds. He's long. He gets rebounds. He's becoming a much better defender quickly.
Absolutely true. Think about Mirotić too. I mean, when you're shooting the three at a 40% level as a four, as a power forward, you're doing so much for Derek. I mean, it's no coincidence Derek just destroyed it in the fourth quarter. He was so good in that fourth quarter. A big reason for that is Mirotić out in the court, standing at the three-point line and stretching the floor. He's a stretch four. I mean, you cannot leave that guy open. He's shooting 40% from three, 45% from the field. He is playing at such a high level right now. I just can't even believe it. I mean, I didn't expect him to play at all. And I think I would have been right in that assessment if we didn't have the injuries, really. If you look at it from games 4 to 10, I mentioned this before in the last podcast, he was really struggling. He was shooting 22% from the field. He was playing, you know, single-digit minutes, wasn't getting an opportunity. I think Taj went down with the ankle, or it was either Taj and Gasol missed a few games there on that West Coast trip, which opened up a spot for him. And when he got the minutes, he just took it and ran with it. And this kid is just, I mean, he does something to impress me every game I watch. And every time he goes out there and plays, there's something else that I see that I'm like, this guy really has the ability to beat Dirk Light. If he can develop a post game and get a little bit stronger, he's got to get stronger. He is going to be almost unstoppable on the offensive end. He's very quick, in my opinion, and he can hit the three. I think he can dribble the ball. He can pass. There's really nothing this guy can't do, but with the exception of, you know, I haven't really seen him in the post. And if he can develop that, then he's going to be too strong and too big for threes, and he's going to be too fast for fours. And it'll be like a Kukoc type of player who really will have no faults on the offensive end. And I can't say enough good stuff about this kid. And I'm glad that Tibbs kept him in yesterday, because the reason Derek was thriving was primarily because he was out there opening up the floor for him.
Oh, God, Derek was so great yesterday. But
it was awesome.
I agree with everything you're saying about Mirotić. However, I mean, I think that you might be giving him too low of a ceiling here. I mean, comparing him to Tony Kukoc, or even saying that, like, Dirk Light. I mean, obviously, Dirk is an amazing player, Hall of Famer. I don't know what this kid's ceiling is. I mean, the fact that this guy is playing like this, he is 23 years old. He is a rookie. He just came into this league. We're in December. You know, we're crossing Christmas right now. He's only really, his averages of 8.3 points a game and 5 rebounds, his PER right now is like almost, it's almost 20. I mean, which is like, we're like the elite players are, is in the 20s. This guy's doing this in 18 minutes a game. I mean, he's averaging 18 minutes a game, I think, over the season right now.
8.3 points and 18.6 minutes per game. The guy would be a double-digit player if he was getting decent, you know, decent minutes
from the beginning. Let's look at this month, because I think that tells the story. This month is when he started to kind of take off. He's averaging 11 points a game in 21 minutes, 6 rebounds, shooting 46%, 42 from 3. You know, really, I mean, the beginning, the first month of the season, he was at 2.5 points a game. You know, I mean, he's consistently gotten better, like you see rookies do. But when he gets going, he certainly has had better flashes than any other rookie has had so far. First of all, he could win Rookie of the Year. He'd be very deserving of it. It's not just because Jabari Parker's going down. But two, who knows what this kid's going to look like at the end of the year? I mean, he's not put together. He had not had, I guess he did. I mean, in the middle of December, at the way beginning of December, he had 4 games where he scored double digits in a row. And then he was off for a couple games. Early in the first month of the year, he was very sporadic in what he did. I mean, it wasn't until the middle of November that he even had a double-digit performance. I think the first game of the year he did, and then he didn't again until about a month and a half later. But now almost every single night he's getting double-digit performances. Thibodeau has more confidence in him. He's getting more confidence in himself. And you see, game in and game out, how much he's progressing. He's progressing at just a tremendous rate. I mean, what he looked like, I did not know if he would get his shit together this year after watching at the beginning of the year. He just looked too slow. He looked too clumsy. But to watch him now, he's becoming a decent defender. He's a good rebounder. He's a decent shot blocker. He's extremely long, and he can be a pest down low. These are things that I didn't even see at the beginning of the year, and we're a month later in the season. What is this guy going to look like at the end of the year? The dynamic that he gives his team is remarkable. When you're talking about the fact that this month he's shooting over 40% from three, that's a deadly three-point shooter. He's already averaging almost 3 three-point attempts a game in 20 minutes. Give this guy a little bit of time. Let's let his minutes go up a little bit more. Let's let Tibbs get even more comfortable in him. This is a guy that's going to be taking 5-6 threes a game. That's Korver territory. And if that guy at the power forward position can be shooting over 40%, this guy, we're going to be so freaking deadly. I mean, that's everything. That's what you need. Because when you got a big shooting threes like that, a dependable big from the three-point line, it changes everything because teams don't know how to defend it. They don't have the tools. You're not built
no,
to play
I agree.
Guys like that.
I agree. Mark, there's only two warning signs I see for this team. One of them, it has to be said, is Kirk Heinrich. He continues to get ridiculous amounts of minutes for the CBA level playing that he's been providing. On the offensive end, words cannot describe how atrocious this guy has been on the offensive end. And I do have to mention, because yesterday I was watching a game, like, oh, great, you know, finally, Tibbs, you know, decides to side with the offense, and he put Bricks next to Rose, and then I find out, well, Kirk hurt his hammy, so he's out, and that's the reason why I saw it. You know, and amazing, we scored 49 points without Kirk out there to set up the offense. I did a little back-of-the-napkin math. Out of all the NBA players in the league, with 179 or more field goal attempts, Kirk's 36.6% field goal percentage is the third worst. Ironically, can you name the other two players with a lower field goal percentage with 179 attempts or more attempts?
Josh Smith?
DJ Augustine and CJ Miles.
Ironically, oh, really?
Yeah, I was shocked to see that DJ was shooting so poorly, but CJ Miles and DJ Augustine are the only two players in the league with a lower field goal percentage than Kirk. Who have shot more than at or more 179 attempts. So, in other words, he's playing incredibly bad. And if you take out that Cleveland game, I mean, I think he would probably be the worst. I don't know how that would affect the math, but I'm pretty sure he would be the worst in the NBA. So, but he keeps on getting minutes. And so that's the one thing I dislike. And the other thing I do have to bring up is Gasol's minutes are far too high. I was happy to see him, you know, give him a break yesterday. He sat the whole fourth quarter. But you got to find a way to keep that guy's minutes under control. Interesting tweet I came up with from at Fly Riv yesterday, and I forwarded it. There's only three players in the NBA and who are in the top 50 in minutes played per game who are 30 years and over. And Gasol's leading that group. I'll find the stat. Go ahead and give me your opinions on it. Oh, here it is. Of the top 40 players in minutes per game, top 40, only three are over 30. Number 12, Gasol at 34 years old. Number 15, Kobe Bryant at 36 years old. And number 20, Joe Johnson at 33 years old. Those are the only three guys. I mean, Gasol's averaging more minutes per game than Bryant. So that's got to stop. That has to stop as a center. That just... You know, it's a lot easier to play more minutes as a 2, 3, or 1 because you're not giving the same kind of pounding. He's got to find a way to reel back those minutes, and I hope he's found it in Mirotić. So you got your answer right there.
Well, and Taj, because, I mean, you know, Taj didn't play the fourth quarter either yesterday, and Taj had a pretty good game. I agree with you. I do think, though, I'm not going to criticize Thibodeau's distribution of minutes to the extent that with rookies, it's always seemed to work out because he challenges the rookies to bring their game, and then you see that the rookies on this team have generally become okay, or players that you didn't think were going to be very good like DJ Augustine or Nate Robinson, you know, they come over here and they're good, and that's because I think it's because he challenges them with the minutes. And I do suspect now that Gasol's minutes will start to dip a little bit. I mean, it was the beginning of the year, he was fresh. Now we're getting towards, you know, closer towards the middle point of the year. With Mirotić playing a lot better, I'm assuming that Gasol's minutes should drop, or at least I expect that to happen. As far as Heinrich, I didn't realize how bad Heinrich was playing. I guess I shouldn't be surprised because his numbers aren't that different from what they normally are. But the fact that he's shooting worse from two than he is from three, you know, his three-point percentage isn't dreadful. 38% is not great, but it's not dreadful. But to be shooting, what, 36%, did you say? 36.5%?
That's coming right down. He was shooting over 40 from three, and you know, everybody was throwing that at me every 5 minutes. Oh, he's shooting in the last, like, three games, I think he's, like, two of whatever he's shooting a horrible percentage from three lately, and that's falling faster than a rock, and he'll be back, you know, at 36-37%, which isn't great. It's not great for a two or a three. It's barely acceptable, especially when you consider it's Kirk Heinrich who's shooting every one of his threes with no one within 6 or 7 feet. You know, he doesn't jack up threes, contested threes. He never does. He's always wide freaking open. So, I mean, it's unacceptable. His offensive performance is horrible. And anybody that argued any differently isn't watching the games. And I know everybody, there's a whole effort, well, he does all this other, you know, BS, and he's great, and the coach loves him because he does it how it's drawn up, and all the reporters love him, and all the beat writers love him, and half the fan base loves him. He has sucked this year. He's been horrible. And anybody else say any differently hasn't been watching the games. If it wasn't for guys like Aaron Brooks covering his rear end and other guys who have stepped up and actually played well, we'd be all over this guy's ass, as far as playing terrible. So hopefully he can get his game up to an acceptable level. But right now it's not.
How is Brooks playing 10 minutes less a game than Kirk Heinrich when Brooks is averaging almost 45% from three, 47% from inside the arc, and three assists a game in 20 minutes? In 20 minutes.
For one minute, Mark, can we just say, Garpax, you guys deserve a pat on the back. I mean, the acquisition of him, Jimmy Butler drafted at 30, Taj Gibson drafted in the 20s, Mirotić drafted in the 20s. All I hear are complaints about these two guys. Those four moves alone are GM of the year type moves. I mean, look at Butler and what he's become at number 30. Yeah. You know how many bums were drafted ahead of Jimmy Butler? And the Bulls drafted him at 30. And there was a lot. And I remember when he was drafted. Who's this guy? You know, a lot of questions, right? Home run. Mirotić. Mirotić was drafted in the 20s. This guy is easily, if you look at all the rookies.
Yeah, but he fell because he didn't want to play. He only wanted to go to contenders. So
doesn't matter. Even so, to me, it doesn't matter. You still got him in the 20s. I mean, come on. This guy's playing like a top two. He's a rookie of the year candidate. Taj Gibson at 26. Are you kidding me? And even, you know, we all laughed about, some of the other. So what were the other picks that, what was the other one I wanted to mention? Oh, gosh, it skips my head right now what I wanted to say. But anyhow, they deserve a Johnson. Johnson for Toronto, still in the league, playing pretty well. You know, you remember we got a lot, and rightly so. He was kind of a bust for us, James Johnson, but he's still in the league. It's not like they struck out and missed on a quality NBA player. Do you know what I'm saying? The only one out of all their picks that was in, you know, that was – obviously, dropped the ball is Tyrus Thomas, and that's more on Tyrus Thomas than it was on them. I think
they've
done a great job.
Bullshit. I'm not going to say that.
All right, maybe not. Okay, maybe you're right there. But overall, give him a pat on the back. Give him a pat on the back.
For sure. And when you're saying, when you're talking about picks that are in the mid-20s, they shouldn't be good at all anyway. So the fact, not only, we've had like a million hits in this distance where teams have throwaways. I mean, at that point in the draft, you get throwaway picks, and yeah, we're drafting better than teams that have picks that are 10, 15 spots above them. Yeah, that is absolutely incredible. And the fact that they had the eye 3 years in a row to find somebody to either replace Rose or back up Rose, who has been either good enough to keep the team afloat, DJ Augustine and Nate Robinson, or actually been good enough. Aaron Brooks has helped bring this team to another level. Let's just be honest. I mean, Brooks has scored almost 20 points in his last three games. I really, really hope that this is starting to open up Tibbs' eyes a little bit. Aaron Brooks should be on the floor more than 20 minutes a game. If Kirk Heinrich is playing 27, 28 minutes a night, Aaron Brooks should be on the floor more than that, because at least that amount, because he can play with Derrick Rose. You could play Derrick at the two. Kirk's not such an unbelievable defender that it offsets the fact that he's so terrible offensively. Aaron Brooks is an amazing offensive player. He's an amazing offensive player, and he changes the game, and he did that yesterday. I mean, he got to the hoop effortlessly yesterday, and he was a huge part of why we were able to be so great at the end of the game. I don't get why he's – I mean, yesterday he played 25 minutes. I guess that's pretty good. He played 32 the day before. He's averaging almost 23 over the last five games, but he's well north of 20 in the last three. Hopefully this is a turning point for this team. Hopefully – especially, hopefully Kirk Heinrich's hamstring is just shredded so that Aaron Brooks can get some more minutes, and then all
well,
of a sudden –
let's not say that.
Come on. Who really care?
Don't take the low road here. No, I do care. I don't want him to be shredded. He's an important backup. I want him, Heinrich, playing 15 minutes a game to back up Rose at the point guard position, and that's all I want him doing. And I don't want him closing games. I've tweeted this out 100 times. I mean, why is this guy closing out games at the shooting guard position? He sucks. He should not be playing next to Rose. If you're going to close out games in shooting guard position, you have two options, Tibbs. This is what I want to see. Aaron Brooks with the right matchups at the shooting guard position with Rose at point guard, or you throw Dunleavy out there and you have Jimmy at the two with Rose. Those are the only two options. Or maybe even in, I keep on saying this. I don't know why everybody thinks I'm nuts. I think Mirotić can guard some threes in the league. I think he's shown enough quickness to say, you can put him at the three for 5-10 minutes against the right matchup. Yeah, he's not going to guard LeBron, but are you really scared of Luol Deng destroying Mirotić if you're guarding those two together? I'm not. I think there's a couple threes in the league you can throw him against. You know, so I think he deserves some minutes at the three. Mark, you still there? I got a really important point I want to make.
Yeah, let me hear.
Next 10 games are bookended with two games at Washington. So Wizards are a good team this year. They got a really nice record. We know we lost them in the first round last year. So here's the next 10 games.
Oh, boy.
At Wizards, they got the Lakers at home. In your head, I want you to count out win-loss, okay? Don't tell it to me. I want to hear what you think they're going to be over the next 10. Yeah, so we're at the Wizards, Lakers at home, New Orleans Pelicans at home. You're at the Pacers, the Nets at home. You got the Nuggets at home. We're playing the Celtics at home, the Rockets at home, the Jazz at home. And then we finish the next 10-game stretch again at the Wizards. A lot of home games in there. What do you think their record is for the next 10 games?
Maybe 8-2.
I agree with you. That's what I said, too, in my head. I want to see them split at least. The Wizards winning both those games in D.C., it's going to be a little bit tough. I'd like to see them win one out of two, and then they should beat the Lakers. They should beat the Pelicans at home. They should beat the Pacers in Indiana. They should beat the Nets. They should beat Denver. They should beat Boston. They should beat...
Maybe you can get lucky with Houston. Maybe you can get lucky.
Maybe.
It's not lucky. If we think we're a good team, if we think we're one of the best teams in the league and that we can win a title, we got to beat teams like Houston, because I don't think Houston's a title contender. I think they're very good, but I don't think that they're a title contender. That's you got to beat – first, you got to annihilate the teams in the Eastern Conference at this point. I do think the East has a bit of an – I think the East is better than what people gave them credit for, but at the same time, I cannot watch the Toronto Raptors and try to fathom for 5 minutes how their record is so good. I don't get it. And how have they been able to stay so goddamn good without DeMar DeRozan? This team is averaging almost as many points a game as the Golden State Warriors, but they don't have Stephon Curry and they don't have Klay Thompson. How are they doing it? How are they doing it?
I don't know. How is Atlanta winning? Atlanta goes into Houston and wins. I mean, it's insane how Atlanta keeps on winning. I don't think that team is that great. I mean, I think Kyle Korver is probably a top three player on that team, and they keep on winning. It's amazing to me.
So that is – okay. So do you believe – is Toronto for real?
Yeah, how are they doing it? That's a good question, too. I think they're a good team. I think they're – yes, they are for real. I don't think they're better than the Bulls. I don't think they're better than the Cavs. I don't think they're better than Washington.
Can they win a title?
No, not yet. No.
Can Atlanta win a title?
No.
Can Washington win a title?
I think the odds are very slim they'd win a title, but I think they can win the East. I think they got a lot of talent, man. That's a good team. I think they're, like, right now I'd put them third in the East behind us and the Cavs as far as odds to win a title. Would you agree?
Yes, they only have...
Would you agree?
I don't know, man, because when you look at Toronto and Atlanta, Toronto has an 8-point point differential. Atlanta has a 6. That's a big statistic. I mean, Atlanta's only giving up 97 points a game, but they're scoring 103. Toronto is scoring almost 109 points a game. I mean, they have the second highest points for of any team in the league, and arguably their best player has been out for like 3 weeks now, 4 weeks, and they've just maintained how good they are. I don't know why they're so good. I don't get it, but you can't argue with an 8-point point differential. Atlanta, I mean, same thing. I mean, I have no idea how they are so good.
I don't.
You
either.
Do see that at this point. We've only lost 9 games. They've all lost 7. I mean, Washington, of all those teams, they have the tightest. They're the worst offensively of all of those teams. I don't know if they have the depth to beat a team like us. So I'm going to argue more for a team like Toronto with that giant point differential than a team like Washington. I do think that Chicago, at this point, I mean, talent-wise, I don't see how we can't be the best team in the East. I mean, we have the most talent of any team. I mean, you can argue Cleveland just because of their big three, but they don't have the depth, anything close to it, that we have. So, fine. Chicago, Cleveland, and then take one of those other teams. That being the case, we have to stomp on the Eastern Conference teams when we play them. And I think you need to make a nice – if you want me to believe that this is a championship-caliber team, you have to stomp on the Eastern Conference teams for the most part. You can get a loss here and there, but you got to beat the teams almost every night. And then as far as the Western Conference teams, you have to you just have to be systematically picking apart those Western Conference teams. I mean, it's okay if you lose, here and there. We lost to Golden State, fine. But, you know, we did beat the Clippers already. We've beaten Memphis already, and we've beaten Portland already. You know, you got to pick apart those teams a little bit. And you got to, you know, New Orleans, they're a playoff team right now. They're eighth in the West. You got to win a handful of those games, or at least split them against those Western Conference teams, for me to believe that you're a championship-caliber team. So with Houston coming to the United Center of those 10 games, I think the Bulls have a good shot. So, I mean, if we lose two games in those 10, would I be surprised if those two games are maybe to, like, a Boston and a Brooklyn? Yeah, maybe, because it seems like our losses so far this year have mostly come to bad teams. We've stepped it up for the most part when we've played good teams, for the most part, even when we're injured. We beat Memphis last week when we were injured.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that was a big win. That team had one loss on the road. Mirotić played fantastic. You know, Butler was phenomenal again. The whole time, I go back in my head to 2010 and 11 when Rose, you know, was at his MVP level. The big question was, where are we going to get these guys that can help him in the last 5 minutes? Where are we going to get these guys to score? And now you got two guys, easily, you could look to in Gasol and Butler. It's just amazing. And not only are those two great options.
You have more than that, though. You have more than that.
Yeah, but it's like not only are those, they become, you know, Gasol's always going to have a great post game, but you have Butler becoming this force who gets to the line. Mark, yesterday the Bulls were 43 out of 47 from the free throw line. Butler was 11 for 11, and Gasol was 10 for 10. You are not going to lose games with guys, those two guys getting 21 free throws and making every one. You're not going to lose. I don't care who you're playing. So you have two guys that can get to the line, which is a huge advantage that we never had before. And not only that, they shoot at an incredible rate. I can't say enough about the job Garland Pax has done. I mean, this team could be absolutely freaking awesome, and it could absolutely win a title this year. And I think it's got to be done this year. You know, because I think next year, you know, Noah's going to be a little older, Gasol's going to be a little older. I'm really starting to become bullish on this team. I think it's a title contender. And right now, I put them, there's very few teams in the NBA I'd say are, you know, going to be prohibitive favorites against them. I think they could beat anybody. Who scares
you?
Yeah,
absolutely. What's the worst
matchup for us? Let's pretend we do get out of the East. Who? Golden State?
If we get out of the it's a tough call, man, because I think that, you know what, in a 7-game series, I think that we would figure out a way to contain them offensively, and they're not – I mean, so far this season they've played pretty well defensively, but I don't think in a 7-game series they'd be able to fight with our bigs. We're just bigger and better down low. Nobody scares me, whereas, you know, every year there's always been teams where I'm like, yeah, you're not going to beat them, like Miami. This year I'm like, I don't think there's anybody that's just like, hey, if we played them in a 7-game series, we can't win. That's what I think makes a championship caliber team. I bet if you ask fans in Golden State right now, who scares you? They'd say nobody also. Whereas that's a team that I think should be afraid of people just because of they don't really have that bruising front court.
Well,
that makes for a really tough team, but we do. So I don't, nobody really scared. I think that we have to figure ourselves out a little bit more. I think we're still figuring out the best rotations and the best ways for this team to play, but I think we can play with anyone.
The big thing about Bogut is so huge for Golden State. They have, you know, he's a defensive force. I'm shocked when I saw him in person. He made Amir Sheik look small. I mean, he is really a big key part for them because you need a rim protector and you need a guy to prevent, you know, you just need a guy like him down low to stop all the nonsense, you know, and perimeter breakdowns. And when he's lost and he's got knee injuries again, and he often is lost, I really think that puts that team in a really tough spot. They're going to be completely dependent on all their guys hitting from the outside. Could happen. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, between the Bulls and Butler Rose, and it's either between those two and, you know, Golden State's backcourt for who's the best in the league. And if those two guys go off and really start, you know, doing the job, who knows what's going to happen. Hey, man, I got to run. I got to take this. Hold on a second. Well, you talk. Let me jump on the other line, okay?
Okay. I am amazed. I'm looking at the Hawks lineup right now. And it's just amazing how this team has only lost 7 games. I mean, their leading scorer, Jeff Teague, 16.8 a night. Paul Millsap is their second leading scorer at 16.2. And nobody – you have 5 guys on the team that are cracking 10. But everybody's – you know, nobody that's really dominating. You look at their bench. I haven't even heard of these guys. Dennis Schroeder, Mike Scott, Pero Antic, Mike Musiala, Sheldon Mack. Who the hell are these guys?
Schroeder, I mean, Schroeder's been really good, and he's a rookie.
He has been.
He's going to be a really good ball player, and that was a nice
Kent
pick.
Kent Bazemore? Is that a superhero in disguise?
Korver's been phenomenal, too. I mean, that guy's
unbelievable.
Can't say enough
How
about
is
him.
This team doing this? And then you look at Toronto, and it's like their best players. Giannis Valanciunas, Terrence Ross. I mean, you know, Lou Williams. Their best player is Kyle Lowry. Their second best player is DeMar DeRozan, who hasn't even been playing. He hasn't played. He's missed almost half the season at this point. They've played 29 games. He's only played 16 of them, and this team is playing so goddamn well. It's unbelievable what these two teams are doing right now. What is the last time you saw two teams seemingly overachieving like this?
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a long time. You're right. We'll see what happens. I'm not sure. I haven't looked it up, but once those guys start playing the West, I don't see these records holding up. I say that, though, and Atlanta goes into Houston and wins. I mean, that happened this week, and I'm just like, what is it going to take, man? I mean, what's going on here for these guys to start losing some of these games? But I know for certain, I think it was Washington. Washington hadn't played many Western teams, you know, and there's no doubt the West is much deeper and much better. You've come around on that, I hope, right?
The West is much deeper and much better, but I'm just saying that it's still the East is a lot better than people thought the East were going to be. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, Indiana's falling apart.
They'll be back.
There's still some bad teams in the East. I mean, East Orlando's not good. Charlotte doesn't look good right now. I mean, Celtics, surprisingly, I think the last time I looked, had the eighth spot this season.
No, they don't need more. But, yeah, I mean, you still have at the eighth spot a team that's dramatically under 500. Even Miami's not 500, and they're at the seventh spot. But I'm saying from five and up, you do have five teams in the East now that at least can make for an interesting series, whereas last season you had, like, two. I mean, everybody last season was just waiting for the Eastern Conference Finals, as has been pretty much the case for the last, like, 4 or 5 years. This year, I do think that you could start getting some interesting – if Toronto and Atlanta hold up like this, you could be getting a good second round where, you know, all the matchups are pretty good in that second round. It's just the bottom that's complete garbage. Brooklyn, Miami, yeah, even Milwaukee – now that Jabari Parker's gone, Milwaukee's been playing really well. But now that he's gone, they're not going to be able to keep up
with 500.
Just to
say something about that, I just hope the kid comes back. I mean, he's such a good kid. You hate to see that happen, man. I really like that kid. I was looking forward to seeing him. And it's really disappointing to see something like that happen to a quality, you know, human being and player so young as Jabari Parker, man. It's a rough, really rough thing.
Yeah, but you know what? We're watching D-Rose right now. He'll be back. I mean, we know what D-Rose went through. It's not easy. It sucks. But I have a hard time at this point feeling bad for any other team because it's just like we had to go through such hell just to get to here. You know, give Milwaukee their bumps and bruises. All right, you got to draft your great player, and he's been all right his rookie year. So, fine. You'll get him back next year. He'll be fine. You know, it might take 2 years for him to really be, you know, as good as he can be again, but this team isn't going anywhere. They're a first-round exit playoff team, which they should be ecstatic about because they were nowhere near that this year. I mean, they're a much better team. I'm sure they're still going to make the playoffs. They'll probably end up just about as good in the East with or without him. That's the type of team that they are.
Well, we'll see, man. We'll see. I doubt it. I think he's going to be a really good player for them, and I think it's a really rough loss.
He's just not there yet, though. I think he will be, but he's not there yet. So, I mean, he was good, and, I mean, you're obviously taking away a player of that caliber, which makes it tough. But look, the East sucks. Milwaukee's 500. Will Miami maybe overtake them for the sixth spot? Maybe. But are they still better than Brooklyn? Probably, even without Jabari Parker.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, I'd say so. That's a tough call. It's gonna be. I think without Jabari, I think Brooklyn will probably pass them.
Brooklyn's like four games under 500, man. I think in the history of basketball, you've never seen a star player tear his ACL and have it have less of an effect on his team as what's gonna happen here with Milwaukee and Jabari Parker. It'll have so little effect, you won't even notice he's gone. They almost beat the Clippers last night.
Yeah, it's amazing. But I do think it. I think maybe Brooklyn's going to pass them up by now. I think you're going to see them start taking a nosedive. All right, man, I got to hit the road, brother.
Well, as always, it's been fun, Freddie. Good talk. I'm looking forward. You have a merry, merry Christmas, man. Enjoy the Christmas Day game. Who do we play this Christmas? Is it the Lakers?
Yeah, Lakers. That should be fun watching the Kobe shoot. You know, it's 38%, Heinrich like 30-some percent, and he's been horrible this year. Anybody you know, I know he's a great player. He's one of the best of all time. But you want to judge somebody based on their performance this year, he's been absolutely horrible. And anybody who thinks differently hasn't been watching.
My God, he's shooting Kobe Bryant right now. Over the last five games, he's shooting under 30%.
Terrible.
The last two games, he shot yesterday, 8 for 30 against Sacramento.
Yeah.
26%. 8 from 30. He was 8 for 26 just 2 days before against Indiana. Oh, my God.
Keeps
3 for
shooting.
15 against Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
20%. Oh, boy. Okay. Yep. You win.
Yep.
That's terrible.
He's been terrible.
And,
and everybody wants to make excuses for it, and it, just why I had a real bad taste in my mouth with him about complaining about his teammates and yelling at the GM. And that guy is such a clown. Yeah, he's been such a clown on so many things, and just it's disgusting. I mean, to me, that you would be yelling about everybody else when, dude, look in the mirror. You're shooting 36. You're in the 30s percent-wise. Quit talking about everybody else and get your game together before you start complaining. And the big reason they don't have that much talent is because it's a big, fat contract. If you're really concerned about that, why don't you do with Dirk what Dirk did? But you didn't. You know, so, and everybody loves him, and I'm going to make excuses for him. The guy is so far from Jordan, it's disgusting. He's not even in the same stratosphere. You know, so.
Jordan never listening
to this because I know he's a big fan.
Jordan never reached depths like this, where he was this bad off.
No.
How selfish must you be? I know your team's not winning, but to be shooting 30 shots a game when you're shooting 25%, that's just selfish basketball right there. I mean, anybody, you could go give the ball to anyone. Nick Young. How about the fact, I remember during that Spurs game, Kobe was taking stupid shots and Nick Young was on fire.
Yeah, how about it? Exactly. Yeah, and then he had to win it. You know, he had to win it, and he's telling him, they had that video of him telling him, get me the ball, whatever. I don't know. It's just disgusting. It really is. And, you know, whatever.
I can't wait to play him. I'm looking forward to that. Being a Jew, I have nothing to do on Christmas, so I'm just going to sit down, get myself some popcorn, and maybe put up a piece of mistletoe so my dogs can give me a kiss and watch some Lakers basketball.
Well, happy Hanukkah to you, my friend, then. And also, still enjoy the holiday. It's still nice, right? Have a good time. And,
well, I mean, I guess, other than the fact that I get mildly suicidal because nobody includes me in their Christmas cheer.
Well, I'm including you. I'll toast to you. And then,
well, thanks, Fred. Maybe I can get a phone call on Christmas because I sit here in my dark apartment with the lights on.
So happy Hanukkah to you, my brother, and Merry Christmas to all the listeners, and happy Hanukkah to our Jewish listeners, and all the best in 2015. Well, I'm sure we'll have a show before then, so.
Well, we'll try. But if not, until next time, if it ain't bowls,
it
ain't baseball.
It's just why I had a real bad time.
It's hard to be a Jew on Christmas. My friends won't let me join in any games. And I can't sing Christmas songs or decorate a Christmas tree or leave water out for Rudolph, 'cause there's something wrong with me. Why is it that Santa passes over my house every year? And instead of eating ham, I have to eat kosher latkes. Instead of Silent Night, I'm singing Hu Hachdol Gavish. And what the f*** is up with lighting all these f***ing candles? Tell me, please. I'm a Jew.